The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus took Peter, John, and James and went up the mountain to pray. While he was praying, his face changed in appearance and his clothing became dazzling white. And behold, two men were conversing with him, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spoke of his exodus that he was going to accomplish in Jerusalem. Peter and his companions had been overcome by sleep, but becoming fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men standing with him. As they were about to part from him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." But he did not know what he was saying. While he was still speaking, a cloud came and cast a shadow over them, and they became frightened when they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my chosen son, listen to him." After the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. They fell silent and did not at that time tell anyone what they had seen. The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, everyone. And happy second week of Lent. We have a full week and a half under our belt of Lent thus far. So I guess right now we can kind of check in with ourselves to see how we have been doing with whatever commitments that we've made for this Lenten time, whether it's giving up something or whether it's doing something. It's always good to have a check-in moment, right? And I think being over a week in, it's a good time for us to think about if what we've decided to do is working out. And if not, what we could do is a very famous word that we use in business school all the time, make a pivot. Meaning, what can we do that makes more sense? I know that I'm going to be traveling the next few weeks. You actually will not see me until Palm Sunday. And I know that a lot of the things I thought I could be doing this Lent are just simply not going to work out well once I start traveling and my schedule is all over the place. So let's be patient with ourselves, yet still challenge ourselves to see where exactly is the Lord calling us to be with him as we are trying to understand where we're going. And if you were with me here on Ash Wednesday or heard me preach last Sunday, I always like to think about when we hear the word Ash, A-S-H, it stands for always seek heaven, always seek heaven, right? Lent is a time for us to rejoice in the great gift of the resurrection, the course that is given to us by the way that we are able to understand our sufferings and our crosses as being purifying means that bring us into the heavenly realm. So let's always seek heaven together. Today's readings, I think, are from the first reading and the gospel, are these interesting readings of things that are almost seemingly out of place. Great acts of wonder. This very strange ritual that God does with Abraham in the first reading of actually cutting up animals and a smoking pot that seems to come out of nowhere flying through them. And then, of course, in the gospel, this event of Peter, James, and John going up a mountain and Jesus changing his appearance, and people who are dead, namely Moses and Elijah, show up. These are very strange stories. Many times we get so used to hearing these stories in the gospel that we take them for granted, but I think it's important for us to realize that they really are kind of strange. I've been thinking about the Transfiguration, which is what we hear in the gospel today, and how that really relates practically to our lives. Hopefully, in your own life, there's been a moment of an encounter with someone where you really thought you understood this person, you really thought you had them pegged, you really thought you maybe even had them pigeonholed in a certain way of being a certain type of person, and then they will say or do something that completely surprises you, completely just catches you off guard. And many times, when that happens, your whole paradigm starts to shift. Your whole way of understanding people starts to shift. The judgments that you've had have now just been challenged. One of the things I've been trying to do since I've been here in this program at Berkeley is every time we're in class sessions, which happen every few weeks, I try to make it a point to see if I could at least meet up with someone who I've not actually spoken one-on-one with yet, one of my fellow classmates. And one of the really amazing things about being here in Berkeley is that the people that comprise the cohort I'm with, and there's 72 of us, literally are people from all over the world. I would say that about half of the people in that cohort were not born here in the United States. And I've been amazed by getting to meet people one-on-one, how certain types of ideas in my head of who I thought this person was or what their experience was all about have been completely blown out of the water when I actually sit down and talk to the person one-on-one. And this, to me, is a really amazing thing because as you get older, and I just turned 40 this year, not saying that I'm that old, but you start to think that you really understand just how the world works. You think you really understand people. You think, okay, I see what this type of person is. I see the type of person that this person is. There's certain type of categories that we may have in our heads, and we just kind of automatically throw people in different categories because we've been seasoned. But not only have we been seasoned, we've also been bruised. We've met enough people in our lives who've disappointed us in one way or the other. We've been let down by people. People have hurt us. People have injured us. And all of that clouds our vision of the person in front of us because automatically we're trying to see where this person fits in with our whole life experiences of the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to people. Yet when we are challenged by an encounter, it's a great moment for us to realize how little we know. The Transfiguration, I think, could be looked upon in that way. This comes in the 9th chapter of Luke's Gospel. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the 9th chapter of Luke's Gospel. It's in this Gospel that the great miracle, of the multiplication of the loaves and the fish take place. It's in the same chapter where Peter confesses to Jesus that he's the Messiah. It's in the same chapter where Jesus starts saying that if you want to follow me, you have to take up your cross. And all these things are very mysterious things. Naturally, a multiplication of food is a very miraculous event. Peter saying that Jesus is the Messiah is a miraculous proclamation. And Jesus talking about picking up your cross, if anything, must have sounded mysterious. Of course, we understand these things now all in light of Good Friday and the resurrection, but all this happened well before those events. So in a certain sense, the disciples are trying to piece together the picture. They're trying to figure out exactly who is this guy. And then we have this event, the Transfiguration. Just as they are trying to put the pieces together for themselves, they're now blown away by something that they can't really even describe. Yet, what does this event do to them? Well, it puts them in a covert mission. They don't tell anyone about this. And perhaps they don't tell anyone about this because they don't even think that anyone would maybe even believe what they just saw. They probably don't tell anyone because they don't even know how to even describe what they just saw. How many people would believe that this man who's just hanging around with them, sitting on boats and making camp with them from town to town, changes his appearance, turns dazzling white, and two of the great patriarchs, two of the great figures of the history of the Jewish people show up? Who would have believed any of this? But yet, I would make the argument that what they saw was the closest thing to reality, because it was reality. They saw who Jesus truly is. They saw the resurrected Christ before the resurrection. They saw the communion that Jesus has with everyone, not just the disciples, but with the patriarchs, with those who've gone before them in the heavenly realm. Peter, James, and John got a glimpse of reality. And whatever they thought about Jesus, however much they were priding themselves as how they were piecing it together, and even if Peter was getting kind of excited that he kind of got it right, that Jesus is the Messiah, that none of that really mattered, because now they were just beholding reality. They didn't have to figure it out. And what does that mean for us? How can we possibly be in a place where we're just beholding reality, beholding Jesus for who he really is? I think the only way of doing this is if we devote ourselves to becoming contemplatives. Devoting ourselves to becoming contemplatives. All of us are called to have a contemplative heart. Every single person, especially every single person who identifies with being a Christian. But what does that mean? I'm sure many of us have heard the word contemplation, and we may have some ideas of what we think that means. For many of us, it may think that, well, that means that we have to somehow get more quiet, maybe pray more quietly, maybe try to imitate monks and nuns who are in the spirit of contemplation. We look at them as people who have retreated from the world to focus on thinking about God, praying. And that's all a good starting point for us to understand what contemplation is all about. But the contemplative is someone who is always contemplating God's presence, the reality of Jesus's presence among us in every situation, in every single person, in all of creation. It's amazing to think that nothing that we encounter is somehow isolated from the reality of God. Absolutely nothing. Even things that are evil are not removed from the presence of God. Because even the capacity to do evil is only possible because God, in a mysterious way, allows it. And of course, we're reminded of these things every time we look at the news. And the horrible story that came out of New Zealand this week, of course, may fill us with lots of different thoughts. But the contemplative would look at something like that and not just try to take a side, not just try to have empathy for the victims and their families, but also try to somehow make sense of what led this man to do what he did. To have some sense of mercy and compassion. Yet, that is hard to do. But a contemplative is one who recognizes that he or she is only able to contemplate the presence of God in a person and in a situation if that person is always seeking to be united with Jesus. If that person is always reclaiming his or her identity as a beloved son and daughter of a loving father. Lent is a time for us to reclaim the identity that we have, the reality that we are all beloved sons and daughters of a loving father. And when we come to communion, we are brought into communion with the beloved Son, Jesus. And the same relationship that God the Father has with Jesus the Son is the same relationship that God the Father has with each one of us who make up the body of Christ. Because we find our unity with God through communion. And it's from this altar that we're given the strength to be ongoing, walking contemplatives, always seeking the body of Christ, always seeking the presence of Christ, always seeking where God is in each and every person and situation. To be a contemplative means we have to even detach ourselves from those things that we claim to make up our spiritual progress. Meaning that all of us are on a journey, and all of us, hopefully, are growing closer to God. And whether it's through prayer or intellectual pursuits, we all have grown in our awareness of who God is. And we can be proud of the fact that we've been given that opportunity to grow in our awareness. But we have to detach ourselves even from that so that we can make ourselves completely open to the reality that is before us, the presence of God that's before us. So while this story of the Transfiguration almost sounds just like Jesus showing off, or just showing that he's somehow different, he's actually helping us to accept reality. The reality that God's glory, his presence, is amongst us. The question we have to ask ourselves is, how much will we allow God's presence in the other, Jesus in the other, to transform us and enable us to grow closer to the same Jesus? Let's continue to seek heaven together. Let's continue to pray for each other. And most importantly, let's be walking contemplatives. May God bless you.